From Hollywood, it's the new Edgar Bergen Hour with Charlie McCarthy.
Now, if you say help me, I'll mow you down.
It's Sunday night, and time again transcribed for Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy with Mortimer Sturd, Effie Clinker, Gary Crosby, Carol Richards, Ray Noble, Jack Kirkwood, the Mellow Man, yours truly, John Heaston, and our special guest, Dr. Frederick Webb Hodge, world's leading authority on the American Indian, and Jack Benny. Ladies and gentlemen, this past weekend, Edgar Bergen attached his trailer to the back of his car, and he and Charlie were off to Palm Springs for a glorious and inexpensive vacation in the sun. As it turned out, it wasn't as inexpensive as they thought, but to see what happened, let's look in on Edgar and Charlie as they approach Palm Springs with Edgar behind the wheel.
His black denim toupee and his high button shoes.
All right, Charlie. Yeah. Hey, are you enjoying this ride?
It's okay. Can't you go a little faster in this thing?
Well, we're moving right along as it is. After all, we just passed three cars.
Yeah, but they were parked.
Oh, I see. So you better check our trailer back there. How does it look?
Well, it looks a little like Elsa Maxwell doing your rumba. speed it up, Berger. Step on it, will you?
Well, now, take it easy. We're entering Palm Springs now. Oh, look over there. Somebody left a golf club lying in the sand there.
Really? That's Frank Sinatra taking a sun bath.
Well, now, we better keep our eye open for this Blue Skies Trailer Village.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one that Jack Benny is part owner of.
Yeah.
And, you know, he promised to give us a very special rate.
Jack did?
Yes. Now, I know what you're thinking. He is a tough man to tangle with over money.
Yeah, you both throw pennies around like manhole covers.
Yeah.
That must be Jack Benny's trailer over there. Look at the sign in front. Free water, free electricity, and also free violin lessons. That slight extra charge.
Yeah. That's the place, all right. I'll pull in.
All right.
There we go.
Ah, well, here we are, Charlie. Now, there must be a parking attendant. Oh, here's one coming towards us, yes.
Park your car for 2 bits, sir.
That's Benny. Jack, how come that you're parking cars?
Oh, I'll do anything to make a buck.
I see.
Gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Skies Trailer Village, surrounded by swaying palm trees, and you're welcome to pick all the dates you can eat.
Oh, well, that's really swell.
For 69 cents a pound.
Oh.
Here, Edgar, have a date. I hope you don't mind if I take it out of your first pound.
No.
We'd save money by getting out of here now.
No.
Now, don't knock my little business, Charlie. A man my age has to start thinking about his future.
Yeah.
Jack, what is your age? Now, there's been a lot of kidding. Now, how about settling it once and all? Just how old are you, Jack?
39.
39.
Going on 38.
Go on.
Let's face it, Buster, the only way you'll ever see 50 again is on a speedometer.
That's a nice line for a guest star.
I'm sorry, Jack, but our trailer wasn't big enough to bring any riders along, you see. Well, this is quite a trailer park you've got here. Very nice.
Well, I'm just running it as a sideline. After all, who knows, as a comedian, I may not be able to go on forever.
Well, haven't you already?
They did it to me again.
Well, anyway, Jack, we're here, and we'd like to check in.
See, I don't know, Edgar. We have a certain standard to maintain, and your trailer is pretty old.
Oh.
Just look how thin those tires are. I mean, you can see right through the rubber.
Oh, you can. Now, keep your hands off those tires, Jack. Yeah, stop feeling those tires, Jack.
I'm sorry, Edgar. I forgot about my hangnail.
Yeah.
Now what do we do? Well, I also fix tires.
Nice.
I'll do anything for a buck.
Yeah. Well, here's a dollar. Go get a manicure.
Now, where can I put that junkie? Edgar, tell you what I'll do. I'll put you way down at the end, right next to the road.
Well, why down there next to the road?
Yeah, your trailer will be all right. There, people will think it's just an accident.
Oh, come on, Bergie. Let's take the spot here and check in. Come on.
Well, now, okay. Now, where's the desk clerk? Desk clerk?
Care to register, sir?
You mean you?
I told you, I'll do anything for a buck.
Yeah, we're saving on actors this way.
Now, you better tell us. Now, what are your rates?
Oh, you'll find me very cheap.
Yes, we have. Yeah, all right.
He's a regular knotty pine Fred Allen. I threw that in myself, you know. They had me down for another
Jack, you still have avoided telling us what your rates are. That is special rates for Fred.
Well, what would you say to $9 a night?
No. Oh, come now. You wouldn't charge that much to poor little old me, would you?
Certainly. That's how I got to be rich little old me.
Yeah. Well, I won't pay a cent over $2, so I guess the deal is off then.
Now, wait a minute. That was my first offer.
Yeah, well, you're crushing my carnation. No, all right.
How about $8.75?
$2.25 is as high as I'll go.
Oh. This is the Battle of the Titans. Two tiger titans I've never seen here.
Oh. Now, $8.50, not a penny lower.
Ridiculous. $3.50.
$8.25.
$3.75.
$8.
$4.
$7.75.
Oh, Jack, what are we arguing about?
Blood, that's what you're arguing about.
I'll tell you what, Edgar, I don't want to quibble over a few bucks. Let's settle for $5.
Oh, okay, that's a deal, Jack. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the preceding scene starring Edgar Bergen and Jack Benny was from the picture Money is a Many Splendor Thing.
I'll trade you that for the
Yeah.
You better with
Yeah.
We're all set then, aren't we?
Yeah, it ought to be fun staying here at the Blue Skies Trailer Village, especially with you, one of the owners, Mr. Benny. You know, you're such a popular celebrity and such a good comedian.
Oh, you're just saying that.
No, no. If I was saying it, you wouldn't come out so good.
I wonder what Don Wilson would charge to sit on him.
Yeah. Jack, how about showing us around the place a little bit?
Sure, I'll be glad to.
All right.
Now, over here is our swimming pool.
Oh,
of course,
yeah.
You know, there's a 25-cent service charge per person if you use the swimming pool.
Well, that's fair enough. It's reasonable.
When there's water in it, it's a dollar.
If I know Bergen, he'll take it dry.
Then there's our lovely bathroom over here.
Oh, so there's the Oh, no!
What's the matter?
I peeked inside. Parking meters. Oh, no.
And then give me Oh, gentlemen, before I forget, we have another special service here at the Blue Skies Trailer Village. For a very slight extra charge, you're furnished with entertainment.
What kind of entertainment?
Oh, it's the best. Really outstanding. Yeah. I go from trailer to trailer playing requests on my violin.
He'll do anything for a buck, yes.
How much does it cost not to have you play your violin?
You couldn't afford it.
I see.
Maybe we just ought to buy earplugs.
Well, I'll show you how everyone here in the trailer park feels about my violin playing.
You've stopped playing. You're putting your violin away.
I'll do anything, even that for a buck.
Right.
Okay, come on back, folks. Park your car for a quarter. 2 bits, right this way.
Charlie, wasn't it wonderful of Jack Benny to drop in on us?
Yeah, but that's not business of him being only 39.
Well, we can't question it unless we have positive information.
Well, I got it.
Yeah?
While he was in there, I took a peek at his driving license.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
What did it say?
It said for covered wagons only.
Oh, no. That's ridiculous, Charlie.
Hello, Edgar. Hiya, Charlie.
Well, it's Gary Crosby. You know, Gary, we were just speaking about one of your father's partners in the Blue Skies Trailer Village. Tell me, Gary, how do you feel about trailer living?
It's really a great life, Edgar, but, as he said, recognizing a song cue when he hears one, but not for me. They're writing songs of love, but not for me. A lucky star above, but not for me. With love to lead the way, I found more clouds of gray than any old Russian play could guarantee. Well, I was a fool to fall and get that way. I hope a laugh and also lack a day. Although I can't dismiss the memory of her kiss, I know it's not for me. To lead the way, I've found more clouds of gray than any old Russian play could guarantee. I was a fool to fall and get that way. I hope a laugh and also lack a day. Although I can't dismiss the memory of her kiss, I know it's not for me. No, it's not. Not for me.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here is where we take care of you do-it-yourself fans as we proudly present our genius of all trades, Professor Kirkwood and his do-it-yourself department.
Professor, since you've been going with that bus saw, you must be down to about two fingers.
How many?
Two fingers.
I don't mind if I do. No chaser, please.
Professor, what is your subject for tonight?
Tonight's subject will be how to make money at home with my print-it-yourself kit.
Now, just a second, Professor. This money that you're going to show us how to print, it can't be genuine.
So what? Listen, son, we're living in the age of falsies. No. Teeth, hair, shoulders, and other things too humorous to mention.
I say, pardon me, old boy, but are you allowed to print money yourself?
Why, certainly. Haven't you ever heard of freedom of the press?
Now, just a second. Now, let's stop this foolishness. Kirkwood, I'm positive it's against the law to print real money.
Well, that's where we play it smart.
Oh.
We don't print real money. We just print counterfeit money.
Oh. Kirkwood, you should be ashamed. Don't you ever think of anything except money?
Well, sometimes I think about women.
Oh? What kind of women?
Women with money.
Oh, I got it covered in gold. All I can say to you is this money alone does not bring happiness.
No, but it sure makes your unhappiness awfully pleasant. No, Professor, I'm sorry. I must disagree with you. There are no shortcuts to easy money. Remember, real money doesn't grow on trees.
Yours did, boy. Dummy out of him then.
I say, Kirkwood, old chap, look, is this money you print any good?
Well, let's put it this way.
Uh-huh.
It's like the Hollywood freeway. Dangerous, but passable. Which reminds me, Ray, I could use you. Uh-huh. Do you think you could pass a $20 bill?
Oh, certainly, old boy, if it'll pull over to the right. You're not laughing.
And that's the way it's going to be.
Don't let him talk you into a thing, Ray. I wouldn't touch his counterfeit money with a 10-foot pole.
Now, how about a 9-foot Romanian?
Oh, no.
Oh, turn the fan on, Mother. I'm hot tonight.
Well, I don't want to cool you off, but where did you learn to print money?
Oh, this money-making skill runs in my family.
Oh, it does, does it?
Yes, my father taught my brother how to make $100 bills, and now he's got life with father.
And how about you, Kirkwood? Have you ever been in jail?
Have I ever been in jail? I've been in stir more often than the paddles of a mixmaster.
Well, you've certainly got the bowl for it now.
You're talking with that lazy Susan back there.
Yeah. I'm relaxing.
Back to the subject, how to make your own money.
Oh, it's the police, Kirkwood. They're probably after you.
Oh, wonderful.
You're happy about it?
Of course.
No.
It's depressing if they don't come and get you once in a while. Makes you feel sort of unwanted. Go on, boy.
Go on. Tune in next week, folks, when Professor Kirkwood's topic will be how to engineer your own jailbreak. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm extremely happy to be able to introduce to you once again our outstanding vocal group, the Mellow Men. What are you going to sing tonight, fellows?
Gilly Gilly Austin Chef for Captain Alan Bogan by the Sea.
Yes, but what are you going to sing?
Gilly Gilly Austin Chef for...
Never mind. Just do it.
Okay. There's a tiny house.
There's a tiny house.
By a tiny stream.
By a tiny stream.
Where a lovely lass.
Where a lovely lass.
Had a lovely dream.
Had a lovely dream.
And the dream came true.
And the dream came true. Quite unexpectedly. In Gilly Gilly, up and there for catching an Ellen Bogan by the sea.
She went out one day.
She went out one day.
Where the tulips grow.
Where the tulips grow.
When a handsome lad.
When a handsome lad.
Stopped to say hello.
Stopped to say hello.
And before she knew.
And before he knew. He kissed her tenderly. In Gilly Gilly, up and there for cats and Ellen Bogan by the sea. A happy pair were married one Sunday afternoon. They left the church and ran away to spend their honeymoon.
In a tiny house.
In a tiny house.
By a tiny stream.
By a tiny stream.
Where the lovely lass.
Where the lovely lass.
Had a lovely dream.
Had a lovely dream.
And the last I heard.
And the last I heard. They still live happily. In Gilly Gilly, out some fish for Captain Ellen Bogan by the sea.
In Gilly Gilly,
off and there for cats and Ellen Bogan by the sea.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, we bring you one of the more popular portions of our program, our How to Stay Young department. And here to let us in on her secret of eternal youth is that all-time girl, just back from a rejuvenation course with Ali Khan, Miss Effie Clinker.
Oh, I may be falling apart, but I'm young at heart.
Oh, you look lovely tonight, Miss Clinker.
Oh, yes. I believe in growing old gracefully.
Yes.
Or better still, disgracefully.
Well, I think it's wonderful how you kept your youth.
Yeah. How did you know about George?
No, I didn't.
What you mean?
Yeah. Now tell me, Miss Clinker, nowadays they give shots for almost everything. Are there any shots that you can recommend that make you feel younger?
Oh, yes, indeed there are.
Yes.
After a few shots of scotch, you'd be surprised how young I feel.
Now don't tell me that you indulge, you drink?
Well, the doctor said for my health's sake, I should take a wee drop before going to bed, you know?
Yes, I see.
Yeah. Of course, sometimes I find myself going to bed 4 and 5 times a night. Yes, indeed, I really sleep tight.
Yes. Right now, it's time to answer some of your mail.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, hurry up. It's getting close to one of my bedtimes.
Yes, I know. The first letter is from Minneapolis.
Oh, it's nice up there.
Yes. Here it is. Dear Miss Clinker, I am 80 years old. Would it keep me young if I married a 20-year-old girl?
Sonny, it will probably kill you. It's like buying a steak when you haven't got any teeth.
All right, make sure. Here's one from a listener in Cleveland. My dear Miss Clinker, I am 35 and I'm going with a used car salesman. Should I marry him?
Why, if you love him, what if he is used?
No. My dear Miss Clinker, what is the most important rule in staying young, besides lying, that is?
Well, I would say that good health is most important.
Good health?
Yes. People are too run down these days.
Run down?
Yes.
I say, Effie, old girl, would you say that I looked run down?
You look run over.
All right. Please, Effie, you've still got one more letter to answer. Dear Miss Clinker, do you ever wear a sweater to attract men?
Me wear a sweater with my figure? Oh, silly boy. Well, that would be like trying to flag down the super chief with an empty can of Sterno.
Well, thank you, Miss Clinker. Our time is up. But before we go, do you have any last message?
Sounds like your last one.
No, I'm not. Matter with me?
You've been taking care of yourself.
Yes. Do you have any last message to our audience?
Yes. All of you men out there, take good care of yourselves. Heaven keep you. I wish I could afford it.
Thank you.
The Edgar Bergen Hour, transcribed with Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Snerd, Gary Crosby, Carol Richards, Jack Kirkwood, the Mellow Men, and Ray Noble will be back after station identification. It's the new Edgar Bergen Hour with Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Snerd, Gary Crosby, Carol Richard, Jack Kirkwood, the Mellow Man, Ray Noble, and yours truly, John Heaston.
Smile again. Oh, like I smiled before.
Doo-doo-dee-doo. All right, that's enough now. Why such a sad song, Mortimer?
Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Bergen, I sort of got the dismals today.
The dismals?
Yeah. I'm sort of down in the Humpty Dumps,
I see. Why?
Well, I'm kind of worried,
I see. Worried about what? I see. Worried about what?
Yeah. Oh, about what? Yeah. Well, I'm worried about, things back on the farm, mostly. We got 16 new mouths to feed now.
Oh. A lot of baby pigs or chickens?
No, it's my Uncle Sorghum and Aunt Drusilla. And their kids.
And their kids?
Yeah.
It's Uncle Sorghum and his family.
Yeah, I didn't even know I had an Uncle Sorghum, and they all moved in and they're living there now.
Well, that's... How many children do you say?
16.
Are you sure there are 16?
Well, let me see. There's Vestibula, Twitchy, Narrowhead, Fungus and Grunion, Quagmire, Putrid and Slurp, and... And then, well, then there's the triplets.
Triplets?
Yeah. Then that has gets, yeah.
What are the triplets' names?
Oh, they're Mert, Bert, and Squirt.
I see.
And then there's, there's the oldest sister, you know, Groucho.
Groucho. The sister's name is Groucho.
Yeah, they call her that because she has a mustache and smokes cigars. I see. Yeah, that's the way it goes, yeah.
Well, that must make things pretty crowded around your house.
Oh, they're sleeping all over the darn place. In the kitchen, too.
Is that so, yeah? They don't mind that.
No, all except Cousin Twitchy. He ain't used to sleeping in a strange sink,
Well, they made themselves at home, didn't they?
Oh, they did that. They're even wearing my clothes.
Is that so?
Herkimer, I call him. He got up this morning and got right into my best suit.
Oh, well, that is annoying.
Yeah, it certainly is. What's more, he didn't even give me time to get out of it first.
Mortimer, these people, they don't sound like very attractive relatives.
No. They sure made a mess of the house, too.
I imagine.
I didn't realize how dirty the house was until a dog came in and tried to bury a bone in the living room. Is it?
Bury a bone in the living room.
Yeah. We got wall-to-wall dirt now.
Yeah. How could they drag so much dirt into the house?
I don't know. Well, you know, when those little kids, when they go to sleep, you know what they play? They play that game, This Little Piggy Went to Market.
Well, that's very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, but they do it with real pigs all around.
Well, I know it must annoy you, but remember, Mortimer, blood is thicker than water.
Yeah, I imagine so, yeah, of course. Then again, what isn't? Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Yeah. Relatives, of course, can be a problem. Do you know what Hubbard said about relatives?
Well, I don't care to listen to anything that kind of language, you know. Oh, no.
Oh, you heard the saying.
Well,
haven't you heard it?
I don't know.
Well. It was Albert Hubbard.
Oh, well, that's pretty good.
Well, I haven't said it yet.
Oh.
The devil gives us our relatives. Thank God we can choose our friends. Now, what do you think of that?
Well, how does it go?
It just went.
Oh. I must have been looking the other way.
Yeah. Now, Mortimer, how on earth are you going to get rid of that mob at your house?
Well, I don't know. I don't think they're going to leave.
Why do you say that?
Well, I overheard Uncle Sorghum say, we'll stay until he gets wise. And,
oh, I see. Well, I'm beginning to see the light.
You are?
Yes.
Would you mind turning it up a little so I can see it too? Yeah.
I don't think he's your uncle.
No?
No. And I don't think they're your relatives at all. I think they're a bunch of imposters.
Yeah,
I do.
You may be right at that.
Yes. How can you be so stupid?
Well, it comes easy after you reach the first plateau, I imagine.
Hello, Edgar.
Well, it's Carol Richards.
I hope you'll excuse my coming out early, Edgar, but I've been so anxious to meet Mortimer. Oh, he's really cute. Oh, Mortimer, don't tell me you're a shrinking violet.
Well, not exactly, no. I'm more of a stinkweed type.
Oh, come on now, Mortimer. Don't be afraid of me.
No.
I won't bite you.
You won't, huh?
Mm-mm.
No teeth, huh?
I think you better sing, Carol.
Yeah, go ahead.
You see a pair of laughing eyes, and suddenly you're sighing sighs. You're thinking nothing's wrong, you spring along, boy, then snap. Those eyes, they're part of a tender trap. You're hand in hand beneath a tree, and soon there's music in the breeze. You're acting kind of smart until your heart just goes whap. Those trees that freeze, they're part of the tender trap. Some starry night, when his kisses make you tingle, he'll hold your hand and you'll hate yourself for being single. And all at once it seems so nice. The trees are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. You wonder how it all came about. It's too late now, there's no getting out. You fell in love and love is a tender trap. Some starry night when his kisses make you tingle, he'll hold your hand and you'll hate yourself for being single. And all at once it seems so nice, the folks are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. You wonder how it all came about. It's too late now, there's no getting out. You fell in love and love is a tender trap.
Time for our Meet the People department. Our guest tonight is one of the foremost ethnologists in the United States, and his name is known the world over as one of the outstanding authorities on the American Indian. He holds the position of director of the Southwest Museum in Los Angeles. Here he is, Dr. Frederick Webb Hodge.
Good evening, Dr. Hodge. Now, this is a real pleasure to have you with us tonight, and I realize it may not exactly be good form to inquire into a person's age. You know, Jack Benny seems to dislike such probing, but I confess that I'm curious about you. Is your age a secret, Doctor?
No, I'm 39.
Oh, no. Not you, too, huh? This is contagious. No, seriously, Dr. Hodge, about how old are you?
Mr. Bergen, to tell the truth, I was 91 the 28th of last month.
Well. Years. Well, isn't that wonderful? And how did you celebrate your birthday?
Well, my friends gave me a party and we really had a grand time.
Oh, yes. Dr. Hodge, as the world's foremost authority on American Indian, you've probably devoted a great portion of your life to the study, haven't you?
Well, as a lad in Washington, D.C., I became interested in Indians, and I never have outgrown that lure. It's been most fortunate, for to love one's work is one of the secrets of longevity, I believe.
Yes. Well, now, while we're on the subject of longevity, you certainly should have some ideas on that. What is your thinking about, smoking and liquor?
Well, for years I've smoked a pack and a half a day, and I enjoy an occasional drink. But my friends have always insisted I should indulge only in moderation if I want to live to a ripe old age.
And are your friends as chipper as you?
Oh, most of them have passed on.
They probably didn't take their own advice. Well, so you've given up alcoholic beverages then, haven't you?
Not altogether. I still like a nightcap before retiring.
I hope you're not like Effie Clinker. You don't find yourself retiring two or three times a night.
No. One old-fashioned is quite enough for me.
And undoubtedly you subscribe to getting 10 hours of sleep per night.
I prefer the 8 hours sleep, but can get along on 7. And I have thrived on 6. When I was preparing the handbook of the American Indian, it was not unusual for me to sit up during research, writing, reading proof, until 2 or 3 o'clock every morning. This lasted for 11 years.
Well, you certainly do contradict all the rules I've ever heard laid down for longevity.
Yes. Well, maybe so. But my opinion, there's nothing more important than leading a normal life. If I have a formula, it can probably be summed up as happy work, happy friends, happy family. I'm most fortunate being married to a charming, wonderful woman. I have good friends, and my life's work has been one I love.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you've been interested in Indians since you were a boy.
How did you happen to make it your profession?
Well, I became field secretary of the Hemingway Expedition in 1886.
Oh.
That was the first organized archaeological expedition into the Southwest.
And on the way, did you happen to pass Jack Benny in a covered wagon?
No, but the expedition was a great success. And after my return to Washington, D.C. in 1889, I joined the Bureau of American Ethnology of the Smithsonian Institution.
Well, now, what about the famous Hawakoo expedition that you organized?
Well, under the auspices of the Museum of the American Indian in New York, we made expeditions to excavate the Hawakoo ruin in New Mexico, which was identified as one of the so-called Seven Cities of Cibola.
Mm-hmm.
That is, the Zuni Indians of old.
I see. Now, in conducting these excavations, just what do you look for? What is the index of the culture of the people? Is it the things they've left behind, I suppose?
Well, primarily, in most instances, yes. However, the real test of the Indians' culture is not always discernible in the material things they leave. The Iroquois, for instance, left very little, yet they had reached perhaps the highest degree of culture than any other Indian tribes of North America, north of Mexico.
Well, in what way would you say did the Iroquois exceed that of other Indians?
Well, in a great variety of ways, one of which was the freedom enjoyed by their women.
Uh-huh.
They had women's suffrage, and bear in mind that was many, many years before our own women were so privileged.
Now, that is really surprising. Now, did the Iroquois women ever exercise their, what shall we call it, voting rights?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
The men could not even go to war without permission of the women.
That'd be a good way to eliminate war. By the time the women get through talking it over, the crisis would be over. Or they could just send the women. Dr. Hodge, you are now director of the Southwest Museum here in our city, isn't that right?
Not exactly. I have been director of the museum for 23 years, but at the close of January, I took a sabbatical leave.
I see. To sort of rest up a little bit, huh?
Well, of course not. I took the leave in order to devote my full time to research for the Department of Justice Indian Claims Commission. In other words, as my mother used to say, it's like stopping work to haul timber.
In other words, you're busier than ever now.
Oh, yes. We are endeavoring to settle the Apache Indians' suit against the United States government for land said to have been taken from them, thus involving large parts of the Southwest and running to many millions of dollars.
Sounds like a very important job. Well, Dr. Hodge, I want to thank you for being our guest tonight. A man like you, who is 91 years young, is certainly an inspiration to the rest of us.
Thank you, Mr. Bergen.
And it's getting a little late, so if you'd like, I'll drive you home after the show.
Oh, there's no hurry to get home. Let's have a nightcap.
Yeah. Well, let's live it up. And thank you again, Dr. Hodge.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Gary Crosby returns to sing All at Once You Love Her.
You start to light her cigarette, and all at once you love her. You scarcely talk, you scarcely know, but all at once you love her. You like her eyes, you tell her so. She thinks you're wise and clever. You kiss goodnight, and then you know. You kiss goodnight forever. You wonder where your heart can go. Thank you.
a cigarette.
First cigarette.
Then all at once.
All at once. You love her.
You scarcely talk.
You have scarcely talked.
You scarcely met.
Yes, you scarcely met.
Then all at once.
All at once, you love her. You like her eyes, you tell her so. She thinks you're wise and clever. You kiss goodnight,
you kiss goodnight,
and then you know,
and then you know,
you kiss goodnight forever. You wonder where your heart can go.
Gentlemen, once again, it is time for our weekly excursion into the realm of culture. Tonight, our forum of intellectual titans bring their great wisdom and perception to bear on the ever-continuing scholastic debate, Whither Literature. Here they are, Edgar Bergen and his end table.
Thank you. And good evening, panel.
Oh, how you, kid?
Crazy, man.
Good evening, Professor Kirkwood, Professor Noble,
and, well, if it isn't Mortimer Snurr.
Well, if it isn't, the stork played a dirty trick on the mother.
That'll be enough.
That's exactly what Pam said when they saw me, young.
Gentlemen, our subject for tonight is Whither Literature. Now, to start the discussion, would you like to define the meaning of literature?
I think, you chaps, look, I should be quite good on this subject, really. You know, I was born in a library.
No, you were actually born in a library?
Oh, yes.
How is that possible?
Well, Mother kept trying to tell Dad, but the librarian kept saying, shh.
Your parents were smart that have brought you back after 2 weeks.
You know, boy, after all, I did have to be renewed, you know.
There's a North American van leaving for the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
Why don't you get on it? Or better yet, get under it.
Please, that will do. Professor Kirkwood, what would you say is your favorite book?
Well, it used to be Louie over on 3rd Street, but the cops grabbed him.
No. Oh, too bad.
Yeah, he was on his way to being Bookie of the Month.
No.
Yes, Bookie of the Month.
Yes.
That was a loser.
Mr. Kirkwood, your education is sadly lacking.
Oh, you hurt me, boy. I'll have you know I went to school, and I really enjoyed that day. You mean you only went to school one day? You're supposed to go back?
No. Let's continue. Now, Professor Snurd, who is your favorite author?
Well, I know as well as a little more name. That is my name. No, he's dead, too. Let's see. Oh, when they begin,
I ask you, who is your favorite author?
Oh, Arthur Godfrey.
No.
Yeah. Say, I hear he isn't around anymore. He just fired himself.
Oh, no.
That'll do, gentlemen. Now, I'd like to get one sensible answer from this panel, if I'm not being too optimistic. Professor Noble, yes, do you know Dickens' works?
No, but I'm glad he got the job over.
No. To Charles Dickens.
Oh, Charlie Dickens, of course.
Yes, how silly of me. Yes, yes.
Oh, his books have always occupied an important position in our house.
Is that so?
Oh, yes, yes. See, we have a table with one short leg.
Yes. This is hard to believe. Haven't you read any of Dickens' famous classics? You know you might enjoy Little Women.
Oh, I've enjoyed quite a few of them.
Still on the subject of literature.
I think I changed it for the better.
Yeah.
This is awful.
Our modern writers have been compared unfavorably with the great 15th and 16th century authors, such as Shakespeare, Chaucer, and Bacon. Now, Mortimer. What do you think?
I wasn't thinking. No.
How would you compare the modern ones with Shakespeare, Chaucer, and Bacon?
Well, I'll have some.
You'll have some.
Have some what?
Some of that bacon, no? I'm speaking of Francis Bacon.
Oh, the mule.
No, not. Oh, this is Bacon the man.
Oh, well, count me out. I ain't no cannonball.
Gentlemen, this is a discussion on literature. Certainly you have read some books.
Oh, of course. Well,
naturally, yes.
I just read that book about a bad day at Santa Anita.
Yeah? A book about a bad day at Santa Anita?
Yeah, you know, the naked and the dead.
No.
Yeah.
Another loser.
Yes. I say, did any of you chaps read that new English bestseller? The typewriter murder mystery?
No.
Or Who Shifted Lady Chumley's Carriage?
My favorite is one of those Mother Goose stories, you know, like Little Boy Blue Can Blow Your Nose, one of those. You're a better man than I am, Rin Tin Tin. I like it.
Now, please, gentlemen,
I think that's the book I'm waiting for, just between ourselves, is the new Kinsey report.
Yeah?
Oh, yes. This one's on the love life of the mashed potato.
Yeah.
The love life of the mashed potato?
Oh, yes, old boy. You'd be surprised at what goes on under that gravy.
Is that gravy?
I gotta take a look sometime. Gentlemen, we are here, I repeat again, to discuss the basic difference between modern and classical literature. And there are many of them. Mortimer, would you like to illustrate?
Hmm?
I say, would you like to illustrate?
No, I feel all right.
No, no. I maintain that we're taking this subject too lightly. Now you know that Socrates, what he said about the importance of literature.
No, I don't think I was listening.
Well, I... He said it before you were born.
Well, I know I wasn't listening.
For your information, Socrates lived many years ago in old Greece.
I say he must have been a rancid old duck.
You're not trying to keep this on a level keel at all, is it? I just can't cope with this abysmal ignorance being shown here tonight. This monumental illiteracy. The crass superficiality. The utter incompetence.
Ah, shut up.
Charlie, I'm delighted to see you in such amenable mood today.
Which amenable mood?
Yeah, well, you know, easygoing, easy to get along with, likable, gentle.
Well, it's this way, Bergen. A gentle act, a gentle word makes life pleasanter. Just like it says in the song. Listen.
Gentleness is welcome.
You like that?
I do, Charlie, because it's true. True not only of people, but of cigarettes. That's why for months, all Philip Morris smokers have enjoyed a new cigarette made gentle for modern taste. Born gentle, then refined to special gentleness in the making, this new cigarette comes as a wonderful surprise to veteran smokers, gives today's young smokers just what they require in a cigarette. Enjoy the gentle pleasure, the fresh, unfiltered flavor of new Philip Morris. You'll find it in a smart new red, white, and gold package.
Have a gentle Philip Morris made gentle for you.
Enjoy a new Philip Morris, the gentle cigarette. And now, here is Edgar Bergen.
And now it's time for another bit of sage advice from our rural philosopher, Mortimer. And here he is with Snurd's words for the birds.
A half a loaf is better than no rest at all. Fuck you, Ned.
Good night, everyone.
Remember to listen to Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Sturt, Ray Noble, and the entire ensemble next Sunday at the same time. Tonight's Edgar Bergen Show with Jack Kirkwood, Carol Richards, Gary Crosby, and the Mellow Men was produced and transcribed in Hollywood by Sam Pierce. Stripped by Fire Rose, Hilda Black, and Dino Clicker. This is John Easton speaking.